I just want everyone to start by stating your name for the transcript. And I guess you can start with that.
Margaret Rogers Hunt.
Doretha Jones Blaylock.
Cyrus B. King.
Okie doke. And I wanted to start by asking each of you a little bit about your background, where you're from, for example, and how you, what sort of path you took to come before you came to work at the HL Library. And I guess we could go ahead and start with Ms. Hunt again.
Okay. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina. I came to NC State from Duke University, and before that, Cornell University. I was working at Duke as a reference librarian. I started off as a reference librarian, and I worked as a reference librarian at Duke, Cornell, and the State Library here in Raleigh. I had been at Duke for a short time, and I got a phone call one night. I was not looking for a job at the time, and it was from Cyrus King. From what I understand is that Dr. Littleton had been to a meeting in Atlanta, and he was on the plane coming back with Philip Ogilvy, who was the state librarian at that time, and he told him about a new position that was going to come open in the acquisitions department, and asked him if he could recommend anybody. And what I was told is that Mr. Ogilvy told him that he wasn't sure that I had worked at the State Library and that I had gone to Cornell, but I was back in North Carolina, but that he thought that I would be a good person for the position. So Cyrus called me, and I didn't understand him. I thought he said Sky King. I said, who? And then he went on to tell me about why he was calling. And I was a little bit reluctant because I was at a reference librarian and I had worked in public service, and I was more interested in public service work than in technical service. But we talked, and he assured me that I could have some opportunity to work with faculty and have a little bit of work with faculty, so which would be sort of like doing public service work. So anyway, from there I had an interview, and I came on as the assistant department head in acquisitions, and I worked in that position for 15 years, I think, or something like that. And then there was a new department that was started. It was collection management, and I was the first head of the collection management department, which I did for 10 years. And at the end of that 10-year period, I thought the department was up and running and in good shape, and I thought that was a good time for me to retire, which was 2000. So I did that. I retired, and then I came back and worked for 2 years part-time with the Friends of the Library, working with the book sale. And I also set up the little book section that's in the coffee shop.
Okay. Ms. Blail?
Actually, I came, this being my very first full-time job right out of college, and I was recommended by one of my professors that suggested that I come out and fill out an application. At this time, of course, it was at the height of integration and the beginning of the civil rights, all of the... June of 1964. Actually, that's when they passed the bill. But I was here during that time. And, of course, I came in and interviewed with Mr. King, who I was very impressed with, and obviously he was impressed with me because he called and offered me the job. I was outside playing with Bill at the time, and I ran in to answer the phone, and it was Mr. King. So at that time, I came on, and of course Mr. King was the most genuine person that you could possibly meet at any time, height of anything, any crisis. He's one of the very, very best, one of my most favorite people in the world. And he hired me, and I came on board as, I think it was in the lowest job, wasn't it, Mr. King? Books? But at any time.
Called a searcher.
Searcher.
Wasn't that the term we used?
Was that when I first came?
The searcher was the second. I think you came on as something else in a 56 position. What did you do it for?
Processing books.
Yeah, that's it.
I was processing books.
Book process, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was the title of that? And then I moved up to
a searcher.
A searcher.
Mm-hmm.
That was our highest
which
level
a searcher at that time.
At
the
that
highest
time.
Level for a long
at that time.
Time,
I moved up to a searcher. And during that time, there were quite a few incidents right on Hillsborough Street that refused to serve me for lunch or breakfast or break or anything. Because Mr. King was very instrumental in expressing on my behalf that I worked here, etc. And, of course, he had no control over the actual proprietors and what they chose to do. So a couple of times I got up and walked out of places just so that there would not be an incident.
These are establishments on Hillsborough Street.
On Hillsborough Street, yes. And so it was at that time that we went through that, but very smoothly. I was well taken care of and backed up by Mr. King. And eventually, the barriers broke, but not for a while. It had nothing to do with my working here. There were no incidents here at all. When I came in, actually, I was, I think, the first black, other than the male person, Ed.
Yeah, Ed Walker was
Ed Walker was the male person.
But that was kind of that position was traditionally black.
Right. So there were no, other positions other than housekeeping, male person, your ordinary positions that were symbolic of the positions that black people held. I worked up pretty fast. He was real pleased with me, and I did a great job. And I moved up pretty fast. And I stayed, and then I left after, what was it, 10 years?
Well, he was promoted to a library technical assistant after a searcher.
Right, but I left, and then Mr. King called me back.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot.
I left to pursue, I had another child, and I left hoping to pursue a job in my profession. But I don't think I did that. I just stayed home with my child for like 11 months, and Mr. King called me back. There was somebody had left or something. He called me back and got me out. Prior to that, I think I did go to the bank and work like 2 weeks because I said, oh, I need to get out of here. I need to go back to work, etc. I think I stayed there about 2 weeks, and thank God Mr. King called, and I came back and I was here. For another 50 years. Then he left as he retired. But overall, working under his sponsorship, etc., was really great. And even though I had no idea that I would fit in with this profession, I actually did. I actually excelled in it. And Mr. King to thank, and also Margaret, who eventually became my department head, supervisor, all of those things. So we went through the ranks through quite a few renovations, et cetera, and lasted for a total of 36 years. I've been retired now. Six years, going on 7 years.
Seven in what, May, April or May?
June. And I now work part-time as a receptionist, the easiest, lowest-paying job I've ever had, but I like it. And we get together occasionally still. We're still in contact with each other. And it was just really, I must say, an overall excellent experience for me during my working career. And Mr. King to thank, and Margaret Hunt also.
Can I ask Aretha a question? I'm wondering, Aretha, when you first came, about the library staff, did you find general acceptance by the library staff, or were there some problems with certain people in the library?
Actually, I did not, and that was amazing. Apparently, the people that you had hired previously were of character that did not. There were a few, no problems, however, but having been black all my life, there were some incidents that I could see that people were conforming to what was going on. Mm-hmm. But in the back of my mind, I could tell that there was a little bit of redneck somewhere. Mm-hmm. But none of that came out. Mm-hmm. Actually, in one of the incidents that I was not served at, can you call the name of the place on Hillsborough Street? Maybe I better not. One of the facilities on Hillsborough Street.
Well, it was Baxley's and the bowling
alley. The bowling alley was the place.
Yeah.
The bowling alley. Baxley's was quite acceptable after a while, since I went in with all these rowdy people. But the bowling alley actually just refused to serve me or my coworkers. Mm-hmm. Eventually, it was determined that I said, well, I'll just leave. And, of course, everybody else got up and left, too. And, of course, they got back before I did and had reported it to Mr. King. And I think at that time, I think Mr. King made a very polite phone call, etc., stating that I worked there. But, of course, I appreciated that and the fact that he was actually backing me and had no racial barriers. But that did not do anything for the people who actually owned. They had the right to either serve or not to serve. But in answer to his question, I found the people here rather very acceptable, very acceptable. And quite a few of us now are still very good friends, very good friends. Thanks to Mr. King.
I'll add a little bit to that. It was a little bit different when I came.
And you came in
73? 73, yeah. Okay. But it wasn't as far as the staff is concerned. A tad bit because I came in a supervisory position. So it was a little bit of difference in people accepting me as a black person being their supervisor. So, but it was... it was done in a very subtle way. It was mostly, you know, questions, you know, what is your job? What do you do? How do you know? How are you qualified to do this? And that kinds of things. But, I was able to handle very well, so it passed quickly.
So the sort of resentment and resistance you met a decade later was of a more subtle variety, or?
Yeah, just a couple of people. And it was... question, and I guess it was more like, you know, to see sort of how far they could get or how I would react to it. But once they were aware that I could stand my ground, it soon passed.
That might have been also not a problem or a question, but I did get questioned as to my credentials, which was actually my first job, but I had a college degree, and I was amazed to find out how few people cut mine off.
Sorry, it's wildly unprofessional, but I completely forgot about it.
Yep. I cut mine off.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
But
sorry.
my train of thought.
Let me say just a little bit about the Hillsborough Street businesses.
Yes,
Baxley's, which was on the corner of Hillsborough and Horn, was always pretty good. The bowling alley, when we talked to them about this, the I don't know whether he was the manager or the bowling alley or the restaurant. There was a restaurant in the bowling alley. But he said, this was before the civil rights open accommodations.
Yes, sir.
Legislation was passed. And he said then, he said, I wish they'd go ahead and pass that legislation and everybody would have to do this and it would be easier for me. Because he was worried about losing business from his bowling crowd and some of his folks. But anyhow.
So he was saying if it became law, then he wouldn't have to bear responsibility with his clients.
That's right. It wouldn't be his decision. It would be the law.
Okay.
So I don't know that what his particular own personal view was, but he was concerned about his business. But anyhow, I think Aretha had a lot of courage to go and subject herself to that kind of discrimination. Well, let's see. Going back to me, I grew up here in Raleigh, and I went to Old School at Carolina, got a degree in history, and after was interrupted by 3 years in the military, and I came back and finished up at Carolina. And then went to the University of Kentucky and got a master's in history. And also the reason I went there was because my now wife was there. So that was a good reason to go to the University of Kentucky. But I did get a degree and I got a wife and it all worked out pretty well. And when I came, when I finished at that time, that was in 1949, and jobs were not really very plentiful. And so I came here, and my wife got a job with the YWCA, and I took a job with the campus bookstore, thinking that it would be a temporary job. But I stayed there for 11 years, and I liked it, and I liked being on the campus. And I got to know almost all the faculty because everybody had to deal with the bookstore. And, of course, I got to know Dr. Littleton and Mr. Brown, who were, at that time, Mr. Brown was the director of the library and Dr. Littleton was his associate director. And then I went down to Archives and History and worked there for 3 years. And then, fortunately for me, Mr. Brown and Dr. Littleton...
Is that the State Archives? Or?
Yeah, State Archives downtown. And Dr. Littleton and Mr. Brown called and offered me a position.
Hopefully I'll call
even
back.
Though I did not have a library degree, they were able to work it out because I did have a master's in history that I can do that. And I had had the experience with books, which was what they were looking for because I came into the acquisitions department. And I must say that it would have been very helpful if I'd had a library degree, if I'd had the training, because there was so much I didn't know. But the good news was there were a lot of people, including these two, who were very helpful to me and sort of kept me from falling on my face. So I was very lucky that we had that. And we had both Mr. Brown and Dr. Littleton were people that you could not have better people to work for. And when we hired Aretha, I don't imagine anybody has ever been checked out as thoroughly as Aretha was. We called and checked with Mrs. Francis, who had been one of her teachers and was and is a prominent Raleigh person and knows the community, both black and white, very, very well. And they gave her the highest recommendation. And so we knew that she was going to be good when she came, and it turned out they were absolutely right. And I have to say this too, we had the full support of the administration, including Mrs. Isabella Cannon, who was Dr. Littleton's secretary and Mr. Brown's secretary. And she was very, very helpful on this because she handled a lot of the personnel papers and work. And so at the front office, we had total support. And so that really was helpful, and I think Doretha would agree that all three of those people were very helpful in making this go smoothly.
Well, I asked a question.
And cooperative.
And I thought about it. I never asked it while I was working here, but you know, a lot of what you hear in a lot of situations that people say a position had to be filled, you know, by a black slot, or that person got that position because they were black. So I would like, Mr. King, to talk about how did you all decide, and when you decide, like, to hire, like, Doretha now, or also when I came in, Chad, also there was another African-American woman started on the very same day that I did. So we were the first two, you know, librarians. So, you know, I was the same question. It's a curious mm-hmm. as to how or why you decide to hire Lily and I, and also when you made the decision, the library made the decision to integrate when Doretha was brought in.
Well, when at the time Doretha was hired, there was no affirmative action program on campus that I know of. Mm-hmm. We just decided it was a good idea mm-hmm. to do this. Mm-hmm. And that was a decision that Mr. Brown, actually Dr. Littleton was away at that time. As you may recall, he went away to do his PhD at the mm-hmm. University of Illinois. But Mr. Brown had participated in civil rights marches downtown, and he was just as, couldn't have been better. And a wonderful human being. So when Doretha was hired, there was no thought given to we're filling a slot with an African American because we're supposed to do it. We did it without any, we just did it because we thought it should be done. And now later on, there was a certain amount of pressure. And I say that gladly because there needed to be a certain amount of pressure for all departments on campus to hire more African Americans at both the faculty level and at the administrative level. I believe that Doretha was the first African American hired on campus in a non-traditional job. I believe I'm right about that.
I think so.
Is that mm-hmm. right?
So not working in mail room.
Right. Now, and then somewhere along the line, Chancellor Caldwell said to departments, hire black staff.
Okay.
And that made a big difference. And then later on, there was an affirmative action officer on the campus who encouraged all departments to seek and to interview and to hire, if they were qualified, African American staff members. We, in the library, I think we did have, later on, there was certainly a concerted effort to find qualified African-American staff at both the professional level, the EPA exempt from the Personnel Act, and the SPA level. But I think that the library was committed to this and didn't have to have a lot of pressure put on us to do what was right. I'm not saying we were all virtuous. That's certainly not the case. But I think that there was a commitment by the administration, library administration. And I think that was true when Margaret was hired and when Lily Castor was hired. And I'd say I have one, I disagree with my recollection of hiring Margaret was a little bit different. My recollection is, M.R., that I met you at an North Carolina Library Association.
Yeah, you said that, but I don't remember. You didn't say that on the phone.
Well,
that is one. That was part of the conversation on the phone.
And I got, boy, that's somebody we ought to get.
I remember meeting you, and
we did. And it's one of the best things we ever did.
Well, that's good.
And the other thing I must say, Aretha was a wonderful first person. She was just great in our department in acquisitions. And as she has indicated, the people that she worked with there continue to be her friends. And it's been a wonderful group of people. That their friendships have endured over the years, even after they've retired and gone on their different ways. So I guess that's...
Just want to pause the tape and flip it so I don't catch someone off in mid... some mention of various staff members' involvement in the civil rights movement, in the context of the library and, you know, outside of the context of the library. And I was wondering if each of you could talk about your involvement in the civil rights movement. And, you know, obviously this can predate your working experience at DHL.
Well, when the civil rights movement began, I guess I was toward at the end of my undergraduate career, which was at North Carolina Central. And I guess my biggest involvement, I mean, I didn't have a whole lot of involvement, but I did participate in some of the marches. I finished college in June of 64. I graduated from college. So mostly I was involved in some of the marches. Then after I graduated, I went to Washington, D.C. I worked in a bookstore. I was like the only black person in the bookstore. I worked there for only a few months, and then I went to work in Prince George's County, Maryland, in the public library in the children's department. And I was the only Afro-American person there. I was the first Afro-American person at the State Library, too, also in a professional position, and at Cornell. So I was the first black in a lot of...
You were a pioneer.
In a lot of different areas. When I went to... I first started library school at Drexel in Philadelphia, and I didn't like it. So I only went one quarter, and I came home, and then I worked as a school librarian in Burlington, North Carolina, and that was before schools were integrated there in Alamance County in Burlington. So I worked there for one school year. Then I went back to school again. I got a scholarship to Atlanta University. So I worked there. Of course, the civil rights movement by then it was 1966. The civil rights movement was very active at that time, and that was a real good experience because I got to meet a lot of people. I was a lot of the of the movement was very, very active in Atlanta, and there were people like Stokely Carmichael, Muhammad Ali, and all those people went to a restaurant that was real near in the university area, and so we, began marching and things like that. So that's it. That's it.
Ms. Blair?
I wasn't much of a walker, but...
a walker?
I'm still not much of a walker.
And not much of a walker. Not even on my elliptical. I'm still not that much of a walker. But I was very instrumental in the side phases of affirmative action. And even on this campus, they had... I forgot what that was for... When we facilitated a black and a white, I was in that group that, what's its name that was?
The C.T. Vivian stuff? Not
that? Yes, yes. The C.T. Vivian, but what's his name, our friend that
Larry
was?
Larry Clark?
Larry Clark.
Yeah.
What does CTV stand for?
C.T. Vivian.
That's the person's name.
Oh,
he was
a civil rights leader.
Leader, advocate, very staunch, new.
The university
carried on seminars and workshops where blacks and whites were integrated into one as a whole, expressing opinions from an educational background, and actually just in small print getting to know each other, cultures per se. So I participated in that too, and so did Margaret. We had that on campus, which was very good and very interesting. And the type of people that came on their own accord, some were told to go. And in the meantime, you could tell the ones that did not want to be there. But it was amazing how before the facilitating session was over, the people had basically come together on a very small scale to sort of make this program a success. And I did that, and also I forgot to tell you that I grew up here, went to school, all schools here, graduated from St. Augustine's College. Then when I came to work here, did a couple of courses of personal development that I was allowed to take during work time, an hour or so at the time, which Mr. King was very much in agreement with you pursuing additional education that was open to us. I think we had to pay, $7 for the course or so. And that was
a fringe.
And I took a course in Spanish, a semester in Spanish. But that got to be a little bit much because it was with the child, another child, then to go to the language lab after work was too much because I had to be a wife and mother. The background that I did get, was very happy with, and now in my old age I'm also pursuing taking a Spanish class now with the city of Raleigh that I work with as a receptionist part-time, and I like that a lot. So overall, all in all, it was a great experience. It was my very first full-time job. It was unlike Margaret that had several jobs. I only had one, and it looks like once I got it.
And 2 weeks at the bank.
And you got me out of that. Thank you. I can't thank you enough. And it was one of those things. Oh, and one other very important thing that my older son, Bill, and my younger one is Monty, we tried to get him into the Hillsborough Street Y. That was an incident that Mr. King was very vocal in helping me get into. My son and my one nephew, joined the Y, and of course they were the only black. They must have been, 7 and 8 or so?
I guess so.
Seven or eight. And they wanted to reject them also, but thanks to Mr. King, they were able to stay there. They did a great job. They met a lot of friends, I had to leave work and go pick them up from school on my lunch hour and come back, and then work an hour late, and then go down the street to the Y and pick them up. Mr. King was very, very good at allowing me to do that, because I did get my work done. And I just like to say that now those two little black kids that were not welcome at the Y, one, my son is a cardiologist in Chattanooga. My other nephew is a pulmonary specialist at Duke Regional Hospital. So thanks to Mr. King, that kind of involvement. And from then on, even when they could drive themselves or were not able to drive, still in high school, I had to get up on Saturday morning and bring them to the Y, which then they migrated to two guys to eat, $10 worth of lunch each, and then go back to the Y and stay until they put them out at 9 o'clock. So that was a very good experience, of which they are still very grateful. And they are very fond of Mr. King, too. My children are.
So one of the sad things is that the YMCA on Hillsborough Street was about the most segregated institution in Raleigh, which is the Young Men's Christian Association.
Right. Yes,
was not so Christian on that issue. I'm happy to say they've come a long, long way, and they do wonderful work now, I think, with kids of all races mm-hmm. and backgrounds. But it wasn't...
Not
it
then.
It was a pretty exclusive club for a long time. But and I think Doretha's given me a little more credit than I deserve, but I'm always glad to take it.
It's true.
But one other thing wanted to say, we had a... The second person that we hired, second African-American we hired, was named Val Lee, and she was in the acquisitions department, and her husband, Jim Lee, was a student. And I would say that Jim Lee was the leader of the African-American student community. He was an extremely courageous guy, and he took the leadership and formed an organization called DARE, Direct Action for Racial Equality, mm-hmm. and it was Jim Lee is a real hero, and he's mm-hmm. now, I think, on the faculty at UNC Chapel Hill. But if you folks haven't gotten him on some kind of tape, you ought to, because he's really
I agree.
A story to tell.
Yes,
oh,
yeah. I agree, yes.
But my own background in the civil rights movement, I guess, came partly out of my church. Because at our church we had what we call the Institute of Religion, which was a series of lectures and classes and dinners that were held on six successive Monday nights in January and February. And we brought speakers.
And about what date was this?
Well, when I was there, it was in the 50s.
Okay.
It started in the 40s, but I was there in the 50s. And some of the, one of the wonderful things about that was that the whole program was integrated from the word go. They had it served at dinner at 6 o'clock, integrated. Classes at 7 o'clock, integrated. The lecture at 8 o'clock, integrated. And some of the speakers were very prominent people, including Eleanor Roosevelt, Senator Hubert Humphrey, and then some of the black speakers were Martin Luther King, came here in 1958, was brought here by the Institute. That was the first time he came to Raleigh, I believe. And James Farmer, who was head of CORE, was one of the speakers. So over the period, there were a number of African-American speakers who were really very good. But that was kind of my background, because that coming out of that experience. I was working downtown when the civil rights demonstrations in Raleigh occurred. I was working at Archives and History, but I had a lot of friends on the faculty, many of whom were participating in the civil rights marches downtown. So I had a lot of support for that from friends. And also, you know, in the academic community, it was a little easier to be involved in the civil rights movement than if you had been an attorney or a doctor or something, because you had a lot of support from the faculty. I don't mean to imply that all faculty were in favor of integration. That just wasn't true, unfortunately. But it was a much better climate to work in than some other professions.
And Dr. Littleton asked me to ask you something about your involvement with something, I think the name is Good Neighbor Committee, or?
Good Neighbor Council.
Yeah, the Chancellor Caldwell set up, actually on the recommendation of a man on the Faculty Senate. I was on the Faculty Senate at that time. Set up a Good Neighbor Council on campus. To try to work for better race relations. The first committee that was appointed was all white, all male, and all Southern background. The first thing we had to do once the committee was formed was to try to integrate the committee. The first chairman was Dr. Jim Maddox from the economics department, and Jim Maddox had brought an African American colleague to be on as a visiting professor, and so it was well known where Jim Maddox stood on this issue, and he was very, very good. At that time, there weren't many African-American faculty members. As I recall, there was a woman in sociology, and I cannot remember her name, but anyhow, we got her on the committee. Well, one of the things the committee was advocating, of course, was for more African-American students, more African-American faculty, and we also worked with the businesses along Hillsborough Street trying to get them to open up and integrate. We made recommendations to the chancellor. It was interesting. This is hard to believe now, but we met with the athletic director to encourage the athletic director to recruit more black athletes. Now, if you look at our athletic program today, you couldn't believe that that was necessary, but it was, because there was one, the first African-American athlete was on the tennis team, and if you went to the 50th anniversary celebration, he was prominently displayed there, not displayed, but written up there. And I went there with Paul Breedenberg, and Paul Breedenberg happened to be not only in the philosophy department, but he was the tennis coach that coached this young man who now lives in Durham, and his name will come to me in a minute, I hope. But anyhow, he was the first black athlete to participate in North Carolina athletic program. And when they played Clemson, Clemson refused to play, or at least refused to have their man play, this black fella. And so they arranged for the Clemson team to come to NC State to play, since they wouldn't let them play at Clemson. But anyhow, that's just I don't know how I got off on that. But anyhow, that was from the Good Neighbor Council. That was one of the things we tried to do. We really worked to try to get the various departments to find and to seek out and recruit African American faculty members, and also students. And we recommended that they have an affirmative action officer. And I think that committee also, when Larry Clark came, they worked with Larry Clark, who was a professor in the math and science department, but was the affirmative action officer and vice provost. And he set up this program with C.T. Vivian. And it was, and remains to this day, a controversial program. You'd go away for a weekend, a group of African-American and white faculty and staff. And C.T. Vivian was a master. He would start off, he'd be so gentle and kind. And the minute somebody indicated that they were kind of liberal on the race question, that was a big mistake. Because he would then just show you how bad you were. And he could just about destroy you. Had some people in tears.
Yes.
And I talked to a department head just the other day.
Are they still doing it?
I don't know they're not doing it anymore, I don't think.
But
I talked to a department
head
who went on that program. And I said, well, how'd you like? He said, I've never been so mad in my life. But I think that program did a lot for this campus.
It did, yes.
Said it really made a big difference in attitude.
Yes.
He could make you, as a white person, he could make you feel what it had been like to live as a black person in a segregated society. And that may be a little strong to say you could do that, but that was what he attempted to do, mm-hmm. and he succeeded in many ways.
So, they make black people cry for the white people.
So, C.T. Vivian's name has come up a couple times.
He was excellent.
I guess, since he has, I guess if you could just talk about what made him so compelling. You touched on that a little bit.
C.T. Vivian, if you've, I don't know whether you saw the documentary Eyes on the Prize.
Sure.
C.T. Vivian is prominent in there. He was one of Dr. King's lieutenants and just took all kinds of abuse and just was a remarkably courageous man. He was, a Baptist preacher,
yes.
As many of the of Dr. King's lieutenants were. Of course, all of this happened after the fact, and mostly the civil rights movement was. This was in the 70s, I guess.
Larry Clark came in 74, it was 75,
or even later, late 70s. It was when this happened, but of course, the remnants of segregation were still very much a part of our society.
Yes.
And this was a way that...
just about a decade old.
Uh-huh. Does that answer your question about C.T. Vivian?
Yeah, I think so. Did Ms. Bullylock or Ms. Hunt have any recollections on the man that you could share? Or?
Mm-hmm. Oh, we participated in his group.
That group that Cyrus was talking about, I went also up in...
In it? Chapel Hill?
Yes, in
Rooster Crow or
no,
somebody?
No, not Quail Roost. It's Aqueduct.
Aqueduct. That's where Aqueduct. We went to the Aqueduct Center.
Yeah, and then after that was over, then the sessions that Dorith was talking about were set up, and you were in the groups. Bunch of paired off in the groups. Not big groups.
Yeah, there was
groups,
a certain
like
amount
a table of people.
Yeah, of people, 10 or 12 people.
After that.
You had a white facilitator and a black, and of course, we had the profile and agenda that we followed and got expressions, etc. It was a wonderful program. Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful program.
In our department, in acquisitions department, we had a I think the first black secretary was Dee Riddick.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
That's right.
Dee Riddick. And then we had Yvonne Sanders. And then we had Brenda Wright.
All black that Mr.
All
King hired.
That we had in our department.
Mm-hmm.
And Yvonne, or Dee Riddick, left. I can't remember why she left us, but she was, I liked her so much.
Mm-hmm.
And Yvonne was so good that Dr. Littleton hired her away from acquisitions and took her to the front office. And I was put out about that, but I couldn't tell. Couldn't do anything about it. But she was a love.
Mm-hmm.
And then Brenda Wright was and is a most remarkable young woman. She has
still
raised
is.
How many children?
Three.
Three children. All of them
have extended degrees.
Right. Mm-hmm. Advanced degrees.
Advanced degrees.
Mm-hmm. Brenda.
Basically, as a single parent.
Yeah.
Basically.
A single parent. She did all
that. One of them works in acquisition. Keisha.
Really? Brenda's on campus now.
Yeah, she's still on campus.
Brenda's still on campus.
Brenda is, she had a lot to overcome. She had a lot to deal with in her life, but she was, and I'd say is, a really remarkable young, not so young anymore woman.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there were three in addition to our, that was on the secretarial level. Doretha was on the
administrative
level.
But I think we had more. Your department had more blacks than any other department in the library.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. King had hired at that time, had hired more. There was we had quite a few.
And one thing we ought to mention too is we mentioned the mail clerk,
yes,
Ed
sir.
Walker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Dr. Littleton mentioned him. But he was also a wonderful person.
Wonderful.
And he did an awful lot in this library to break down prejudice,
mm-hmm.
I think. He just was a very fine man.
Very fine.
And I came, lots of people.
Very fine. Gentleman.
Mm-hmm. I have a few more questions I want to ask, but I'm going to cut this off so that I don't cut anyone off in mid-sentence.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
I think Mr. King and Ms. Blaylock were on an affirmative action committee in the 70s that mentioned in the book. Do you recall what the purpose of that committee was and what it accomplished?
Was this a library committee?
Yes, sir.
Is it here?
Yes, ma'am. My impression from the Littleton history was that it was a library history. It may have been on, I think it might be on page 68. I'm not sure if that's the page.
I remember it.
Yeah, I remember y'all being
well,
and it was
obviously it didn't.
It served a purpose. I just can't remember.
Yeah, it says the United States Civil Rights Act and its amendments of the 1960s had a major impact on hiring practices and policies. The UN system required NCSU to submit an affirmative action plan for recruiting. That's right. We worked on that. And Bonnie Baker and Doretha Blaylock and Susan Rose developed the program.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about Ed Walker being the first African American staff member in professional clerical level at the AHL Library. 11.5 FTE black employees or 16%. Out of a total of 73 SBA employees.
What y'all have now? Do y'all know that?
I do not know that. You guys don't remember much. It was just one of those things.
Well, it was one of those things we did.
And it served its purpose
yeah.
and accomplishments. I can't remember.
That's fine.
To say what one line, whether
just,
we changed, we didn't change the world.
It was just one of the things in the... in the Littleton book that I thought I might touch on because they mentioned something.
Well, actually, everything becomes institutionalized in time, but the things we did first of all without
being forced to.
Telling us to do it.
Right,
yeah.
Being forced
after
to do
it. After a while,
it
became necessary for each department to develop a plan, and that's what this committee was
okay,
for.
So.
And then we had to then to say, you know, we took the whole staff and had to figure out how many of this and how many of that, and that's where there were, when Margaret asked about slots, that's where there was a real effort to fill so many
okay.
slots.
Okay.
To come up to
yeah.
expectations
okay. Okay.
in order to not cut the funding.
Yeah, again, it's just one of the times that this process sort of peaks up in that book. And
yes.
I felt
it was outstanding at that time, yes, and it went on for a long time.
No, Ms. Vaughn, you said you worked at a couple of libraries before you came here. How was your experience here the same or different from your previous experiences? If it was.
You better say better. Don't you think you better?
Well, yes.
Well, I stayed here for a
because this was the South.
I stayed here a long time, so it must not have been too bad. But as far as specifically being different, it wasn't a whole lot. I don't think it was a whole lot different. But my take on integration at the time, anyway, it has to, and anything, it's the leadership, and it has to come, the leadership has to come from the top. If the leadership is off, it's never going to be successful when you try to make any kind of change. And Philip Ogilvie, who was a state librarian, was another fantastic person who had worked for justice, you know, all of his life. So he and Cy were very similar. So Philip Ogilvie was the first person. And then, in Prince George's County, like when I work, I had finished undergraduate school, but it was still like more in a trainee support staff kind of position because I hadn't been to library school, and I was treated very well. I learned a lot. At Cornell in Ithaca, New York, of course, the black population was only, when I was there, it was only 2%. It's not that much different now. In a situation like that, I think they don't like think of race too much because they didn't have to encounter, you know, those kind of situations. So I don't think race was a big, big, big issue there. There were no Democrats there, I can tell you that. But it wasn't.
Were there not in Ithaca?
Not many, even faculty in the library, in the whole library. There were two. One person in archives and history and myself. Were the only Democrats at that time. But
you were a missionary in many
it
ways.
Was I really don't think it was a lot different, and I think a lot of it, probably some of it goes back to what Cy says, you know, people like in academia, it was a little bit easier, and I know it is, even today, I think so that it is, because I have friends and know people that work in state government and have told me all kind of stories that just I don't think never would have ever happened here.
Well, this has been really outstanding, and I appreciate you all coming down. And I wanted to ask, was there some other aspect of integration or the civil rights movement or just working at DHL Library you wanted to talk about before we wrapped up?
Well, I want to mention, we talked about the campus, there was one outstanding person on our campus, Al Lowenstein, who was very much, he was a charismatic guy, and he was a leader, and I remember in the civil rights marches would start at Shaw University, you'd gather at Shaw University and sing to get up your courage.
Marching
on the street. And Al Lowenstein was a real leader in that whole part of our history and was on the faculty here. And there's been a biography written of him. Unfortunately, that biography does not cover his time at NC State. It was a real oversight, I think. But anyhow, I just want to mention, and there were some other heroes as far as I was concerned. Howard Miller, who was head of the psychology department, mm-hmm. and Slater Newman in the psychology department. These were guys that were willing to take risks. And Charlie Kahn, who was in the School of Design, who headed up the effort to get signatures on a petition to say that they would patronize restaurants if they would open up. And that seems like such a crazy thing to talk about now, but it was a big deal then. And Charlie Kahn headed that effort up, and that ad was run in the News and Observer, a full-page ad with the signatures of people who said they would patronize. And I remember one day we got a call from Charlie Kahn and said, there's a restaurant on Person Street that is losing business because they've agreed to sign to serve African Americans. We've got to go over there and support them. So it was all the way across town, so we said, golly, that's going to be a real chore. But I tell you, we went, and the food was so good. Mr. Brown loved it. and Harlan and I used to go over there at least twice a week to have lunch. It turned out it wasn't a chore, it was a pleasure. And we got to know the people who ran that place, and Gus Aratakis invited Harlan and myself out to his home and cooked a meal for us there. So anyhow, that was there were some folks on our campus who really did a lot, and Mr. Brown, I was working downtown, but he called me. He said, "Si, we've got to go down in March," that's the kind of administration we had in the library. So it was good to have that kind of wonderful human being in the leadership.
I would like to say that I think the library right now, presently, needs to put forth a little bit more effort in integrating the library. I may be wrong. You're here, so you know. I think it's only one African-American librarian here at the time. The assistant head of acquisitions department, yeah, that's interim, or something like that. So, I mean, so that's less than it was when I came. At least when I came on board, there were two. And I think they've been, since I retired,
30 years.
And it's been dwindling. So I know that this library is bright enough to recruit, can find somebody sharp enough to set the standard, meet the standards. And the progressiveness and moving on. So that's what I would like to put the challenge out for them to do better.
Okay. Well,
in that area.
Okay.
I know.
Well done.
Mm-hmm. And one of the persons that greeted us when we came in, who cannot remember her name, that was showing us here, has been here for a long time, and it looks like she is still in the same position that she was in when she came and when we left. Fine person, I'm sure, but I don't know about the upward mobility. But it was just a pleasure to see her and a couple of other people. But just to know that she's still here, I guess it's something about the library that once you come, you stay until you're 89 years old.
Well,
I'm
one other thing. When I retired, these folks gave me the most wonderful retirement party.
Well, mine was pretty wonderful.
Well, I don't think
Andrea didn't want one.
I didn't want one.
But they did. They really had a nice party for me. Mm-hmm. And
really was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're so well liked, and of course I am too well liked, but I just don't like a lot of stuff. I don't like a lot of goo, 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 goo. As a matter of fact, I told them to limit it to 10 people, and there were more than 10 people in my department, but it was just trying to get them, don't do anything for me, no, no, no. Just, I'm going to ease out of here. But you can't help with people like that, Mr. King and Mark, knowing so many people, if they are a part of anything, then they're going to draw a crowd. And we follow him and her, and all the time we following each other. So, and we shall continue to do that. And I appreciate your time.
Well, for me, this was a wonderful place to work. And the campus was a wonderful place to work. I worked downtown at Archives and History for 3 years.
Yes, sir.
It was great work, nice people, but it wasn't a campus. Mm-hmm. And a campus is an exciting place to be. There's always something going on. In the fall, it all starts up again. Exciting, a whole bunch of kids coming into school. Mm-hmm. So it's a college campus is a great place to work. Yeah. And this one, for me, was really first rate.
Yeah, I agree. College campuses. I'm glad that my career was mainly on college mm-hmm. campuses. Yeah, the state library was, like I said, it's because Phil Ogilvie was a great person uh-huh. to work for. But the work itself does not mm-hmm. compare in the whole like it did working here at the university. Yeah.
I said if I could have moved my job at Archives out here, that would have been great. But that didn't hurt.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks again so much.
And thank you very much.
Thank you.